Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter.
Howdy, watchers, it's Dan, and thank you for joining us in another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. It's a little surreal that we're already at 45 episodes. Thanks for sticking with us. This week, Nyan and our friend Jason provide their thoughts on Black Lagoon, an action crime thriller available to stream via Hulu, Crunchyroll, and Funimation. They checked out the first four episodes of the record. This pitch covers critiques on ADR script choices, the intricacies of anime and opening ending themes, love for Cowboy Bebop anime and partial breakdown of the live-action Netflix show, and other random anime ephemera. Wish to apologize for some audio cutoffs and garbles for which we did our best to smooth over for your listening experience. As a reminder, each new episode will only have one segment, either a pitch of a new show or movie, or feedback from the prior week's pitch. If this podcast is the best or worst thing you've ever heard, please rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you hit us up on our Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook page, you'll probably get a possibly informative or witty response from one of us if that's the thing you want. Finally, if you have a show or movie you want us to watch, please leave a voicemail on our Anchor page, anchor.fm/watchokplease. All right, watchers, don't make us perform colorectal surgery using bullets, and please enjoy the feedback coming at you. All right, we are back here to talk about Black Lagoon, available on Hulu and Crunchyroll. And I'm here to ask Nyan and Jason, so what'd you think?
You know what? For something that felt like it was when I first started the first episode, I thought I was watching some random late 90s Eurodance industrial video. I thought this was KMFDM, honestly. Like, I thought this was just something off the same album as Juke Joy Jezebel from the Mortal Kombat soundtrack.
Yes.
I ended up liking this a lot. I was surprisingly engaged with this, especially since I didn't enjoy My Hero Academia as much. Right. So to get to this and have it be such a shift, and I'm jumping ahead, but in terms of like the pacing and everything, the story structure, overall, I enjoyed this. I had a good time with this. Jason, what were you thinking?
It was okay. I didn't love it, to be honest. It was, how would I describe it? Boy, when they get into it, they just go right at it. You know, I know you would like told us, oh, it's about this businessman who gets pulled in by pirates. That's like the first 10 seconds.
Yep.
You know, like, that's it. He's kidnapped. Yep. We're going full steam ahead, which was, that part was okay. It was a little abrupt, but I was like, okay, got it. He's a businessman. I sort of get what all that means. He, you know, has a boring office job and now he's, you know, running around with pirates. But I don't know. Like, I had a hard time really connecting with any of the characters or like getting into the story personally.
Yeah. Jason, it's so funny that you mentioned the bit about it being so abrupt. I totally had that same reaction when I first watched it back in, I guess, 2006 or so. And it was really odd, but I'm like, okay, well, that's odd, you know, choice of storytelling, but I'm like, I'll push on with it. And then, you know, for, you know, whatever reason over time, I just kind of got sucked into it. I think it was, again, for me, it was like the blend of, like I said before, the music and the characters and whatnot. I really just kind of got pulled into that. But yeah, I definitely could see how, like, because like I said, it was kind of like a little bit of A-Team and a little bit of this other stuff mixed in, like I mentioned during the pitch. So it's totally understandable how, because these characters are kind of very distant in their different quadrants of, like, you know, their personalities, I could definitely see how someone might not feel at home with any one of them. 100%. I can see that.
Nyan, you want to go?
Yeah. For some reason that worked for me. I agree with the analysis in that it definitely jumped in. You didn't make a lot of immediate connections. I guess personally, you know, kind of what I noted in the pitch, that God, I wish I could get kidnapped by pirates, because that was just so much better than my actual job. I sort of immediately related to Rock. Like, that was, I was like, I'm into this. I'm here for this. And maybe that's that for me personally, that's where I was able to jump and not worry about getting connected to anyone. Cause there's not a lot of depth, at least I only got to the first four episodes. I'm not seeing a ton of depth here. It's just a lot of random action. And for me, at least pace wise, that it contrasted with My Hero Academia, which kind of, I felt moved a lot slower. And so I think that might have been why I was more interested in it. And that's what might be why it pulled me in a bit more.
Yeah, no, I definitely feel that. I think that this is not, I mean, My Hero Academia is your typical shonen, like, you know, young boys anime where he constantly has to kind of, you know, power up. It's a fighting anime, so they power up over time. There's a new foe they have to defeat or new level they have to reach, and it's very formulaic and it follows that formula. And so the pacing, like you said, is kind of stretched out so that it can kind of meet that and also kind of allow for the build up and of course you know, sell more product and everything else that goes with that. And here I feel like this is a little more kind of, it's somewhat more adult in that regard, so they were able to play with the pacing more. I think the character wise I see both sides of it, and I think you get a lot deeper into some of the backstories at the end of the first season and into the second season, I think. So you do get a little bit more of a time, and it is maybe more surface level at this point. But again, I just wanted to get that feel, like what you were feeling as far as everything was concerned. And as far as the backdrop itself, where it was in Ruanapur, how do you guys feel about that?
That was cool. I like that. Especially, I think it was episode 3. They delved a little bit more into the, you know, Ruanapur, the vibe of the city and everything. And I thought that was fun. I actually liked that place and wanted to spend more time there for sure.
I was just so surprised to see a city in Southeast Asia that didn't seem like it had a lot of people in it. Honestly, those streets were empty. Like he was able to walk without someone like driving into him on a scooter. That's cool. The city itself definitely did seem interesting. I appreciated that too, Jason, like that episode 3 when they started getting into the city more and diving into things more. I definitely enjoyed it.
Cool. So how did you feel about the balance of action versus the other pieces of it?
So for my opinion, you know, it definitely was very action heavy, especially the first few episodes. I actually watched ahead to episode 6 because the whole storyline with the Nazi art piece was sort of left on a cliffhanger. I was like, well, okay, I'll see what happens and go. And it ends up going about 2 more episodes. And actually, episode 6 was probably my favorite, even though it wasn't on the list that you suggested. But I'm going to give away some spoilers to you, Nyan. Episode 6 is shooting up a bunch of neo-Nazis. So, you know, that's going to be the best episode.
If Wolfenstein is not loaded on your computer currently, this is your kind of your outlet for that, yeah.
Yeah. So but with the action, for me, the struggle with a lot of the action was that the animation was really rough. Maybe I'm just not used to anime, but not being used to anime, a lot of the animation is just like, here's a stationary boat and here's like water going splash, 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 splash. And that's it. And that's the action. And it didn't always feel like, you know, it's not like the sort of excitement you get when you're watching Die Hard or like a really great action movie. It's more like very rough animation and then characters explaining why, yes, they're now surrounding us. Oh, well, what are we going to do? Oh, well, Revy is going to do her 2 hands on them.
that's what he said about her. I think it's a combination. I mean, I don't know what you think about that, basically, but I know that, you know, in my mind, I think there's two factors there. And I mentioned how OAVs, the original animation video, tend to have less of a time crunch when animating. And I think that because this is TV, they had more of a time crunch. And obviously, when the first season comes out, there's this kind of rush to kind of, it had a little bit of a time break between when the novels and the manga first came out and this made it out. So normally there's a rush because if the manga is really hot right now, they want to get the TV series out as soon as possible to catch on the coattails of that popularity. This didn't happen so much here, but I think I mentioned before, this is kind of like where they were beginning the graduation towards going to computers off of the original cell animation. And I think that combined with some of the initial, you know, character and scenic design, I think all kind of played into this rougher, more coarser style. And I think that you'll find that depending upon who was the original artist of the work, originally in animation or originally in comic manga form, it changes a lot on the fluidity and how things work. There's some that's even more coarser than this, I would say, believe it or not. And there's some that takes almost a very kind of more lazy, not, I won't call it lazy, but more kind of a different approach to even character designs, more roundness or less roundness on noses, chins, etc. It all changes.
I'd agree with the assessment that the animation style could have had a smoother finish to it. I think because I've seen other anime stuff, it didn't bother me as much. Because I'm thinking back to like older stuff that I've seen where I was like, no, that is rough. and compared to this, it didn't bother me as much. And I think maybe part of it was also the pacing of the stories that sort of, all right, you've been kidnapped. You're going. You've been reunited with your boss. Your boss hates you. He doesn't care if you live or die. Now you're hanging out with pirates. For me, it was a fun, like, I wasn't taking anything seriously. I'm truly dealing with this as pure escapism. And I think that's why, for me, it just kind of clicked in terms of what I was looking for at the moment.
It was the right anime at the right time in your life, I think, too.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the roughness of the animation, which I do agree is there, didn't pull me out of it as much.
Yeah, interesting. Jason, you didn't identify with that many characters directly. If you had to choose one of your favorites or a favorite, if you guys have one or not yet so far.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing is I feel like every character is just an archetype. You know, going six episodes in, you sort of get a little tiny bit about Revy and New York and, you know, her difficult childhood and how, like, that's given her this really bitter, negative, nihilistic attitude. I'm like, okay, that's kind of fun and interesting. But other than that, like, I know so little about anyone. It was, for me personally, it was kind of hard to relate to any of those characters because of that.
I guess just because of stuff going on with me personally, I definitely gravitated towards Rooker up quite a bit, but I do agree that you didn't get, there wasn't a lot of depth there. I did enjoy Revy probably more than the other guys for usual reasons.
That's why I mentioned the pitch. That's why I said in the pitch. I'm like, there's going to be one character I think you're going to like more for specific reasons.
I had a feeling it was going to go there, but the thing that drove me nuts, character design wise, is like her shorts just never buttoning. Like that was just the entire time. I was like,
yes,
she can button them. Why doesn't she button them when she's trying to kill all these people and jumping from boat to boat?
Right.
Like that seems like a thing that would get in the way.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think it's definitely not the first girl with guns or girl with weapon kind of scenario where there's specific wardrobe choices that might not make the most sense.
Right. Yeah. Everyone else got to cover their belly button. Like what's going on with her outfit? Like, I don't know. I'm just not used to the language of anime where that's, I realize that's how this works, but like there was like a point where like three episodes in, I'm like, so all the women, let's see, the most developed character dresses barely in anything with her you know, pants unbuttoned in Daisy Dukes. And then we have the mob boss, and then everyone else is like a housewife or something. Like that's the women in the show. Maybe there's more later.
They're Benny's Hawaiian shirt fetish. Yeah. So I think that, you know, with there's a couple reasons behind that. I think, I mean, they do try. I think she has to wear a disguise. I can't remember which episode this was, honestly. It was probably in the second season, honestly. But she had to wear a disguise, and she absolutely abhorred it, saying it was like too constrictive. She felt she couldn't move around in it. So she gives that excuse, but the real excuse is not because of something that's within the context of the story, and that's fan service.
Right.
So I mean, that's the primary reason.
I don't know. I find that a little weird. Mm-hmm. It's a little weird. Like, who's watching this and being like, man, I just can't get into this show unless this animated character is barely dressed, you know? Like, oh, yeah, that's what I'm looking for here.
Every single creator out there, I think, might have a different fetish. I mean, if you look at, like, an anime called Squid Girl, a girl who is actually, you know, based out of a squid. She is like squid-like tendencies in certain ways. And so it's like, again, and there are other series that deal with different kinds of, you know, either animal or other kinds of related things. And then they all kind of exude these either biological or other related traits and whatnot. So again, like I said, anime can cover almost every genre that exists out there. And this is just another extended example of that. And I think culturally speaking, this is a release for some people because so many people in Japan were forced to conform and, be the salaryman mentality, so to speak, and represent the company. And there's this whole kind of like push towards that. So this is kind of like the escape. Just how Nine was trying to escape his job in his mind. You know, it's the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I would appreciate being, you know, kidnapped by essentially a Lara Croft Tomb Raider knockoff. That's fine.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense to me. Ultimately, I actually wanted to ask more about the voice acting because I listened to the sub and the dub. Mm-hmm. And The dialogue is weird randomly, but not in a way that it was upsetting, but it was just strange. Like, they just kept making these references to, I have notes saying that they keep talking about colorectal surgery. Giving people extra assholes, yep. Shooting bullets in the back.
I'm pretty sure the show, at least the American version, was written by Google Translate.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is the hardest part about, you know, working with a more complex scenarios with anime, in that the ADR people have to work like 50 times as hard to get something that makes sense. I thought the voice acting itself was okay, but again, I do agree that the ADR script was a little whack. I do agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think my favorite person as far as the voice acting went was the main bad guy, or like the big bad in the first two episodes. Mm-hmm. Who almost sounded like Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yeah.
Like, he was just on the edge, like, waiting for him to ask me to snap into a Slim Jim. Yeah. It was fun. Like, it was really dumb fun. I was on board with that. And that otherwise, just the weirdness of, there was something like, I wrote down Amen, Hallelujah, and Peanut Butter. That was an actual line.
Yep.
I started writing down my favorite line from every episode because there were so many like bizarre lines in there. Best one. You're the one here from episode 3. I think this was my favorite line from the whole series. You're the one destined to dance the cha-cha with some hot lead.
Yes. Yeah. Lots of very colorful kind of phrasing in there. Yeah, for sure.
You contrast that and some of the humor with this with the way the music would shift randomly. Like, if you're comparing the beginning theme, which I still kind of put in that came after late 90s Euro Dance Industrial, and
Red Fraction.
Yeah. Suddenly they hired Angelo Badalamenti from Twin Peaks to do the end theme. This got real weird real quick.
Yeah. Really, the dynamic, the dynamic for opening and ending themes in every series is like very much that major juxtaposition. It's definitely one is like super upbeat, one super kind of like a low, kind of to bring you down from the high of the episode, I guess. I don't know. It'd be fun just to pop on and just play like the first 20 to 30 seconds of like different of opening and ending of each series and just see like exactly disparate nature of like that, how that is. It's hilarious. In my mind as well.
So that's more of an element of the genre as opposed to something that a show would do thematically. Because it led me to believe that maybe there was a thematic reason or something driving the story to have such distinct themes at the beginning and end. And I guess it sounded like that might be the case, Jason, when you were talking about, you know, the character of Revy getting a little grittier, especially since it's basically just, you know, that end sequence is just following Revy, like, I assume on a beach somewhere, and then it's just really moody. So it was like, I thought maybe it was driving into that, but it sounds like, Dan, what you're saying is this is just a weird thing they do with these.
A lot of the opening themes are meant to be vehicles to launch careers or to extend existing careers of musicians. I feel like everything in anime production is a little bit kind of like a little bit of an orchestration of things in my mind. So the creator gets their, you know, inner demons onto the page, so to speak. Then the voice actors come in, they bring in new people, they have old veterans that kind of everyone knows, recognizes their voices. But then the music is like, they usually have some hot upcoming J-pop star or idol do an opening theme song, and because they're super hot, and then if they listen to the theme song, then maybe they'll come watch the show. And then if there is a toy or a merchandise tie-in of some sort, they can do that. Does a lot of things, but it's so interesting to see how that dynamic works in that regard. But yeah, I definitely seen some pretty interesting approaches to different things. You watch like Tenjo Tenge, and like the opening is Japanese rap, so it's like I've seen like almost every single genre come, and I've definitely played stuff. You probably heard random stuff that I played before. So it's out there.
Okay, that's helpful. That explains some of it. But now that I think about it, I liked what I think was the end theme for My Hero Academia. Yeah. That's a banger that I'll listen to randomly. Mm-hmm. That's a good time. But this just was very odd. So it's good to have that.
Yeah, well, and I think that the opening like credits, they do like to intersperse a lot of hints of what's coming up, if you will. So there is a lot of that happens. And the ending theme is usually, again, more of a kind of a character or montage of sorts. So definitely fulfills that kind of element, I think. It's like kind of the weird and wonderful thing about, you know, different series out there. There's like everyone kind of approaches things a little bit different.
So I guess, Jason, as an intro to anime, Are you interested in pursuing other series or?
Well, not really. I guess I'm just a very visual person, and I love great dialogue. And the dialogue, even though it had some great non sequiturs at points, the dialogue didn't always make a ton of sense, and I found things very over-explained at times. And visually, I feel like it didn't always do anything for me. So this is sort of typical for anime. I'm not sure it's something that would connect for me. I like the premise of the show. I like the idea of the show. I'm not sure anything from it particularly connected. And I'm wondering if it's because it's the anime, maybe it's the conventions of anime that don't necessarily.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, the visual element, again, I think the nature of the material itself kind of inspired this style. And I think that if you're looking for something that's a little bit more intensely visual, there are definitely are other, say, movies or other kinds of series that definitely kind of focus more on that. I mean, this is definitely more of this episodic TV kind of thing. I think that, you know, if we were to watch off the top of my head, 5 centimeters per second from Makoto Shinkai, I mean, that's a hugely visual kind of thing. I throw in anime every now and then kind of thing. I wouldn't say it's my staple. I don't do that every week, obviously. But, you know, at some point, you know, maybe I'll do something like a movie. And some of the movies are on the shorter side, too. They're usually usually between an hour and a half on average, a lot of them are, except for like the really crazy, you know, blockbuster ones. And I might, yeah, maybe it might not be a bad idea to kind of go something a little, what I would say a little more quote unquote artsy in that regard in the future, just so you can see a different kind of realm of what that is. Cause it definitely, those are completely different bags in my mind.
Yeah. That would be, I mean, I'd be curious to see something like that. Yeah. Something, you know, a little more visually oriented.
And then there's gag anime, like Ebisu, which are just like what the hell kind of anime. So Ebisu is a talking hamster and basically talks all about, it's a very sexually charged show because it deals with
a hamster.
I'm getting there. So Ebisu's owner,
produced by Richard Gere.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. You know where it is? In your butt. Nope, in your butt. Yeah, sorry for another Family Guy reference there, but yeah. No, but yeah, so yeah, the hamster, it follows Ebisu, who's, you know, and his owner is, you know, an aging Japanese woman who obviously has different issues with dating and her and sex life and sexuality, and Ebisu obviously is there to witness all of this. And Ebisu, so it's a really kind of weird kind of fly on the wall kind of look at the concept of, you know, the older Japanese woman who might be in her late 20s, even early 30s, who's not yet, you know, secured a husband, so to speak. It approaches that stigma a little bit, but then kind of throws everything on its head. And it's really kind of crazy and out there. I definitely wouldn't recommend it for the faint of heart, and I definitely wouldn't want it as your first entry into something. But again, if we have like a checklist of various different like types of, you know, styles of anime, that would be one of them.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's wow.
You remember hearing or watching clips from Excel Saga or Puni Puni Poemi, possibly?
Oh, yeah. That was
another
nuts.
Gag, another yeah. kind of gag anime, I would call it, yeah.
That I thought was interesting because it seemed to be just making fun of other, like parodying other anime genres.
Yeah.
And that was a cool experiment. And a lot of that stuff went right over my head with Excel Saga. I was like, there are just so many tropes that they're making fun of. I'm like, this is weird, but it's probably funny. But then there was stuff that I did pick up on, and I was like, oh, this is cool. That was just a fascinating meta journey.
Yeah, that was like that was meta before meta was like the coolest thing to do in online. So
I was actually thinking in terms of a series Jason might like. I was thinking Cowboy Bebop. Yep. Visually, that's a little bit better.
I have heard of that.
It's the animation is more full.
Oh, I should definitely start with the live action Netflix series of that, right?
Oh,
I've heard people. No, I'm being sarcastic.
I mean, again, it's fine. I thought it was good. I mean, it was enjoyable for me. I definitely watched all of it and thought, you know, they did a decent job of, especially the first episode, they did a very good job of kind of transitioning from the anime to the big screen. And it's not shot for shot, just so everyone knows out there. So it does follow the rough kind of overarching story, even some of the more micro plot elements from the different episodes, but it does kind of detour a little bit here and there from the anime series. And so I think, like, you know, as far as for completeness and character development is concerned, I do prefer the anime to the live action, but there are a lot of, you know, visual elements that kind of do translate.
All right. Well, maybe I'll give that a try next, Cowboy Bebop.
I think that's probably I guess in some ways I would see it as a better version of Black Lagoon. I think in terms of at least U.S. taste, like I like Black Lagoon for what it is. I think I'm going to keep watching it. I'm probably going to go through it all because to me it's something I can kind of relax and have on. I won't be watching the sub. I'll be watching the dub version just to be able to keep it on and just keep it going. But if I was going to compare that and Cowboy Bebop, I think Cowboy Bebop is probably a little bit more elevated in style, visually,
totally,
especially. I think you do a lot better.
I'd say it's more fluid across the board, and it's funny because you know technically Cowboy Bebop is older, than Black Lagoon, but at the same time, I think that the animation style itself it's way more fluid, and I think you know there's way more of this you know genuine thought process in the art design, character design, how these and the music by Yoko Kanno, of course, how that all layers together. And I think that, you know, there's such a, you know, unique expression from that. I mean, there's only a handful of every like, you know, couple years there's a kind of the landmark series that kind of does something that can really run on all cylinders. You know, Cowboy Bebop was definitely one of them in that regard in my mind. And I think that visually, I think, you know, I guess I think that just even the way the characters are, you know, drawn on screen. I mean, with, I feel like there's a lot of features in Black Lagoon that are kind of exaggerated, but they still come out like a little bit rougher. Whereas I think there are some features in Cowboy Bebop that are maybe more exaggerated, but yet they still come out more realistic in some ways, I guess is the word term I'm looking for. So yeah, it's interesting.
But overall, Jason, it sounds like you're not going to move forward with finishing this one up.
I don't think I'm going to be finishing Black Lagoon, unfortunately.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
I'm not sure I have any parting hilarious quotes. I will say the one thing I did like was it was neat seeing the perception, because all these characters are American on this Japanese show. So it's neat sort of seeing the perception of Americans on a Japanese show with a Japanese perspective.
True.
So I thought that was fun. And that was something I really enjoyed from the show.
Yeah.
I actually, when I was watching the fourth episode, I was watching the dub version where they did German accents. And I finished it and I was like, wait, let me go back to the sub version so I can hear what the Japanese actors did in terms of German accents. And I couldn't tell if that was a Japanese person doing a German accent, but yeah, overall. Yeah. Like that I thought was interesting. And it kind of hit me a little bit more with the fourth episode where we get into the Nazis and that perception of other cultures, you know, through a Japanese lens, I thought was interesting.
Yeah. That's a great point.
I was going to say they were still very anti-Nazi, but they're slightly less anti-Nazi than we are. It's like they're Nazis, but they're still people. Whereas in America, we're like Nazis.
Yes.
No. There's no gray area here.
Yeah. That's true. And again, you know, there's a lot of, you know, stigma behind that. Obviously, you know, from there. And I think that, you know, other series deal with Nazi-esque portrayals in different ways, as Nyan will attest to, having suffered through the three Mobile Suit Gundam compilation movies.
That's right. My God, it's been so long.
I know, it's a little bit PTSD, but you kind of put the trauma behind you a little bit.
Yeah, no, a lot of therapy.
Yeah, Gundam's a lot for anyone to take on, and talking with some people in one of the Discords that I'm in, and like we're talking about doing a full Gundam watch, and I'm like, well, where do we start? I'm like, well, there's a lot of ways we can go about this. So if you want to go in the deep end, we start from the OG, we move forward. So it's all good.
And that was back in the 70s, right?
It actually is older than you and I, than all of us, I believe. Actually, it came out March of 1979, I believe. It's like the OG is
it's in decades.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was March 1979. Yeah, that's when the first one came out. And then the compilation movies, I believe, came out in 80 through 82 or 81 or around there. I think it was like a year, a couple years right after, basically. So it kind of had the same kind of thing where it wasn't quite as much of a break as Star Trek was from the motion picture from the OG. That was like about much, it was many more years.
Well, thanks for recommending this, Dan. It's kind of fun to check it out.
Thank you for introducing me to the world of anime. I appreciated it.
That's what we thought. That happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today, and hope you join us next week for another exercise in futility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us.
Until next week, keep on watching.